The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
What exactly is the treatment here going to be, then?
Oh, it's quite simple, really. We're just going to show you some films.
You mean like going to the pictures?
Something like that.
Well, that's good. I like to vidy the old films now and again.
And vidy films I would.
Hey everyone, hey, it's Cannon's podcast coming at you. In case you're wondering why my voice is like this, it's because normally I peak at the beginning. And go back down to this volume, so I thought I'd start off real smooth.
Yeah.
This is what peak performance sounds like.
This early morning podcast. Keep it nice and calm.
Today we're going to be discussing 1971's A Clockwork Orange, directed by Stanley Kubrick, continuing in our AFI canon discussion series. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, let's do this. First segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements. Joining me, Ruben, on the podcast is everybody. So, Patrick,
yeah.
Do you have anything you would like to herald or denounce?
I watched a movie called Pandora's Box. Oh, wait, that was the last podcast we did. Mm-hmm. No, I haven't watched anything since, what was that, like 2 days ago that we did that? Nope.
No, don't look behind the curtain.
Oh, no.
Get out of here, dog.
The sausage.
There's nothing.
Quit licking. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. No, I don't have anything else to... Oh, coffee is good. That's really cool. You should check that out. I don't know if anybody knows about that.
The Pam Grier movie?
Underground thing. I don't
coffee
think,
and cigarettes.
Pam Grier was coffee.
That Jim Jarmusch movie.
Foxy Brown.
She was also coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, she's
that
also
independent movie.
Why? Yeah. Oh yeah. It was an epic reteaming. Jack Hill and Pam Grier back together for another movie where she shoots people.
I need to get up on my
up.
Blaxploitation movies. I am not well versed in them.
It's okay.
Yep. Well,
they're not as good as people say.
Everybody's got
coming
their
right
spots,
here,
I suppose.
Basil?
Man, I have seen some stuff, but some
you
of them.
Herald 2001 this time?
Yeah, since I didn't know last time, officially. But yeah, I have seen some stuff, but it seems like it's either keeping it under wraps or likely to come up at the end of the year for
one
reason or another.
Like Unfriended, Dark Web.
Shh.
Okay.
Shh.
All right.
Don't blow up the spot.
Although I did, speaking of that movie, I did find something on my desktop, when I woke up this morning that I did not download, and I didn't remember being there when I turned my computer off.
Mm.
So now I'm afraid that those unfriended dark web hackers are after me. They're very scary.
Oh, yeah.
I watched some things, but nothing particularly memorable. So.
All right.
What about you, Ruben?
Yeah.
No heralds or denouncements for me either.
Okay.
So this was your pick, Ilya. Tell us
yeah,
about
it is.
In A Clockwork Orange.
So.
Tell us.
Yes. It is.
Tell all of us.
Based on Anthony Burgess's 1962 book, and main character is a guy named Alex, who talks in a strange way that kind of combines Russian, English, and a few other Eastern European languages.
And
and Latin, I guess, as well. Yeah, he
says vidi.
Well, that's Russian, vidit.
Oh, it's,
to see.
Oh, yeah. Well, vidi is also Latin. To see.
For sure.
I came, I
for
saw, sure. Yeah. I conquered. I
came, I saw.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then spends most of his time beating people up and sexually assaulting, raping people. At some point, his droogs, or his gang, who he treats pretty awfully, turns on him during a robbery. And during that robbery, he also ends up killing a woman. And then he's taken in by the police and spends a lot of time in prison, and then in various ways trying to get rehabilitated, mostly in pretty brutal ways, and then is kind of reintroduced to society, where he is too nauseous or too sick to commit any more acts of violence, as he's been conditioned, that whole thing also gets turned on its head when he becomes kind of like a scapegoat character in the media. So yeah, what do you think of this, Ruben?
I liked it a lot. I was close to loving it, but I thought the third act was too long and not totally necessary. Like, the whole karmic retribution seemed to be beating a dead horse a little bit. Like, I kind of felt like I got it, but I mean, maybe that's the point, because it's kind of like a weird propagandistic polemic against propagandistic polemics. Like, it's a movie that's about how terrible violent imagery is while being stuffed to the brim with violent imagery. But yeah, the whole Kubrick thing is still working for me.
How rude of him to turn out to be a good filmmaker after we made fun of him for so long.
I'll take the fall for that. You guys probably wouldn't have done it so much if I hadn't encouraged you. Patrick?
I like this movie more than the last time I watched it. I think a lot of the problems that I had the last time I watched it were technical issues. I kind of felt it felt like it dragged a lot more than I remembered, and I guess that was just me, pasting my earlier experiences with the movie. Because I guess when I first encountered it was such a shock to my system that I was just like, wow, there's like no part of this that isn't like riveting. And then I watched it again and I was like, there are parts of this that are kind of boring. And so I was like, huh, maybe the movie wasn't as good as I thought it was. But watching it this time, there's so much more going on under the surface that I just wasn't thinking about. And I also kind of liked the way that the technical stuff is played out in this. Like, a big part of what I didn't like the last time I watched it was the way that they do the sound for a lot of the prison stuff, where it sounds really echoey and like hollow. And I was like, ooh, I don't like the way that sounds. But now listening to it this time, I'm like, there's a reason that it sounds that way. Like, it's kind of supposed to like fill that atmosphere. Like, this prison is supposed to be a really inhospitable place, and it's supposed to be horrible. And there's a lot of political stuff in it that I enjoyed more this time too. Like, I kind of enjoyed what Kubrick had to say about the way that the state is so much better at violence than any single person could ever be.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, this movie is very ugly, unlike Barry Lyndon, the other movie we discussed, but, like, in a way that I like. Like, not unpleasant to look at cinematography, but I'm like, I like looking at how unpleasant this is. Not just the things that are happening on screen, but often the way things are shot.
Yeah, the fisheye is very ugly looking.
And there's some interesting stuff done with lighting, and, man, I almost freaked out during the part when Alex's friends are drowning him, because it's done in one shot. So Michael McDowell is just underwater for like a minute and a half. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Do they have like a scuba down there or something?
Yeah. I actually have a theory about the way that they did that now, because there is one cut at the very beginning of the scene where they first dunk his head underwater. Because I had the same feeling that you had the last time that I watched it. I was like, damn, he kept his head underwater for a really long time. But there's a cut right after they dunk his head to like a slightly different angle. And so I assume what they did was just have like a little air hose underneath the water, like something like that.
That's my assumption. Unpleasant to watch.
I don't know, though. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously not dead.
But Malcolm McDowell's been in several movies after this, but
he's never been the same.
Replaced him. It's like Avril Lavigne. Yeah. They replaced him with a lookalike.
But I don't know, like, knowing the legend of the way Stanley Kubrick tortured actors, I wouldn't put it past him to have
to literally torture actors.
Dunk his head underwater for that long.
What do you think, Basil?
Impossible style. Maybe he really learned to hold his breath that long, like Tom Cruise did for five.
Entirely possible.
I'm a little in the middle on this. I think for me, the movie kind of gets going once the prison stuff starts happening, but I was actually kind of a little bored during the beginning, which is a little weird because it's, you know, the most kind of gratuitous and unpleasant
famous parts of the movie.
Yeah for sure. Lots of fighting and such, but I'm interested in where this conversation goes, because I think it's a movie that I came away with more kind of like questions than strong feelings, where I was like, I don't know how I feel about this, and I don't know what I feel. I read a really good review that Pauline Kael wrote that I thought was pretty awesome. She didn't like the movie that much, but anyway, if anyone listening hasn't read the review, they should definitely do so, and I might pull it up and go over some parts as we get deeper into the discussion. But right now, not sure.
Yeah,
I share some of Basil's confusion, I guess, a little bit about like how to feel about most of this exactly. I still would say I mostly enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first time I watched it. And I liked the language thing a lot. I thought it was pretty fun. As someone who like understands Russian, it was pretty smart and pretty funny. Although I think, curiously enough, this is the Kubrick film that I laughed the least at. So while it's like,
there are a couple of funny parts, but this
entertaining and like there's it's fun. Like a real mean streak that runs through it, and it's like what Ruben mentioned. I think it's like a pretty deeply like misanthropic movie about a lot of things, basically institutions, people, the ability of people to be changed or to want to change at all, and how, and if that's even a good idea at all, and how basically. And everything ends up getting really messed up because at every point in time after you see like Alex being like so explicitly violent towards people, everything that's done to him is done in like a really ruthless and weirdly like disaffectedly violent manner as well. And then it's like, okay, I'm not sure what to think anymore. Like, I don't like him. I don't think I like this character. I think it's probably okay that he goes through some shit for the things that he did. But at the same time, none of these people that are doing it to him are like especially likable or understandable even. I like the frustration that kind of creates, because usually there's like, oh, there's like some righteous way of the right violence that's like made done to the right people that feels good when you watch it. And this movie like endlessly frustrates you with that, which I think that's like a good thing. But again, like there's still a lot of things about this movie I'm a bit confused by.
Just live a normal life after this. We're not going to let people forget you are a Nazi. Hand me my knife.
Yeah, I think that, I was just going to say very quickly that the performances are sort of pitched as if this is a comedy a lot of the time, which is a little weird because,
the part where he keeps opening his mouth when the, like, warden, head of the interior, whatever, is feeding him, and he's like...
the Minister of Interior.
Mentioned before the podcast, the, like prison guard guy or whatever who's like the way he speaks in like this outrageous like military speak is obviously intended to be pretty funny.
When they have the demonstration and the naked woman walks out on stage, she's like
that guy's face,
with his like lip trembling the whole time.
But I do think
I've never seen a naked woman before.
Haley and I sort of agreed that we actually find Kubrick funnier when it doesn't feel as much like he's trying to be funny. Like Eyes Wide Shut is to me a much, much funnier movie.
Definitely. I mean, I had that problem with that one character in Barry Lyndon, not with the movie in general, but the one character who was always making faces.
But
yeah, I don't know if this movie is supposed to be particularly funny. And yeah, kind of building off what Patrick and Ilya were saying is that, like, I mean, I think the most straightforward or important theme that he's trying to get across is that, like, we've invented ways in which we find violence tolerable because we really want to have violence.
Right.
But, like, the difference between violence that's sanctioned and unsanctioned is, like, very negligible.
Right.
And Kubrick's eyes and I definitely agree is that you know, like, people are like, oh, Alex is a sociopath, but then, like, the whole movie is about how you like watching him in a way, and then when he's watching movies he keeps seeing himself in them, like, doing violence and having sex, and it's like, that's how you watch movies too, isn't it?
Yeah, you monster. That actually sort of addresses one of my earlier questions, which was, like, because I wasn't sure what to make of it, because I think Malcolm McDowell is actually, like, very, very good in this movie. Yeah. I like his performance a lot. But I was wondering whether or not it was at odds with the movie because, like, he's creating a kind of charisma where there shouldn't be. But that interpretation kind of solves that dilemma that I was having.
And I mean, like, he is just, like, a complete shit throughout the entire movie. Like, it is kind of funny to me, like, you watch these scenes where he's supposedly, like, reading the Bible, and the priest thinks, oh, he's being so pious, and he's, like, quoting the Bible, and then, like, the whole time he's just thinking about, like, raping and murdering people, and, like, how much fun it would be to be, like, a Roman that was torturing Jesus, and I was like...
That part is pretty funny. When he imagines Jesus him who's whipping him. It's like, man, history was the best. But, I think that it's kind of cool also that he's, like, essentially, even though he's an extremely violent person, he's essentially, like, a really passive character where, like, he doesn't have actually very much agency. He's just, like, doing whatever's going on. He's like, I'm in prison. Well, I don't want to be here. So then he's just, like, pretending to be into Jesus. And then as soon as, like, a thing comes up that's like, here's this thing that you can get out of prison faster, he's like, oh, I'll just do that. Like, very short-sighted. Not like, I wonder what they do to you to let you out of prison faster. He's like, I don't care. I just want out of prison.
Yeah, I liked how that whole thing went from, like, and like the people that are doing violence to him are, like, progressively less obviously, like, awful. Like, at first it's, like, his gang that are just, like, total...
That are now, at the very beginning,
you know, who are just, like, basically, like, apes. and then the next guy is the prison guy who's, like, you know, yells all the time and is, like, obviously, like, a awful prison dude or whatever. And like, but then like it's the people with the Ludovico technique are like, they're like nice to him sort of in the beginning. Like they like give him like a nice bed to sleep in and like seem to like talk to him without like being overtly violent. But the things they end up doing to them are even worse. And it's just like this thing that like, I don't know if that's intentional in this movie that like, well, obvious acts of violence are obviously, they're awful and everyone knows they're awful. So it's almost kind of boring to talk about the fact that they're awful. Whereas like sort of well-meaning acts that aim to manipulate you and demean you in a way are maybe more deserving of like scorn and like derision than like scrutiny. Maybe something obvious or scrutiny. Which I don't know how to feel about that, if that's really what it's trying to say. Because, I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah, I don't know. Like, it also seems to, like, kind of lash out at the idea of therapy. Or, like, maybe it's like, no? I don't know. Yeah. It's a bit weird.
Yeah. I mean, I there's a whole host of psychology that's very, very bad.
Yeah.
As much as I might want to defend it at times, like experiments for no reason except for to frighten children.
Right.
That was like, B.F. Skinner like had a huge number of experiments where he basically chased children around with a mask on.
Fuck.
to condition them. Jesus. And,
damn.
You know, it's very reminiscent of a lot of that stuff. Yeah. It's not even like bad, but when he's talking to that one woman almost towards the very end of the movie and she's like being so sweet and she's just like, you just need to say what he's, you know, the other person is saying in the panel. Something about that is very unnerving to me as well. She's just doing like normal psychology work and just like being really nice to him, but she's like has no response to what he says. He's like,
yeah,
I want to smash those eggs.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, very good.
Yeah, it's very funny that how glad they are to see that he's extremely violent again at the end of the movie. They're like, oh, thank goodness, he's no longer sick when he gets violent again. Like our experiment in his brain, so we fixed him.
Yeah,
he's cured.
His joke was pretty funny when he was like, oh, sorry, no time for the whole in and out. Gotta get to work or whatever.
Yeah, gotta read the meter. Yeah. Just here to read the meter. Yeah.
I'm very glad that, that the electric company doesn't send people to climb through my window. That'd be unnerving.
Yeah, there was something that a review that I read on Letterboxd pointed out, which was that a lot of this movie is about the way that we condition people to respond to things that they like things that are actually pleasurable in your life. Like you're supposed to feel bad about them a lot of times. And I think it's very funny. Like the whole idea of sex is you're supposed to feel bad about it, but like feeling bad about it makes it into this thing that is horrible. Like it is bad. And you know, you think about like, there are some scenes in this movie where it's like people have sex and it's totally consensual and that should be fine, but it comes off as being part of the milieu of, you know, like rape and murder and ultra violence. Mm-hmm. And it's like
the ridiculous fast motion threesomes.
Yeah. That's pretty
funny.
Could
have yakety sex playing, but
yeah.
Pretty much.
That's the William Tell overture playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point because it's like, almost like it seems like a pretty forward, like progressive thing that it's like the society decided, consent is like too nebulous and we can't really say where the line is. So this character just can't have sex again because
yeah. We're going to take away all the things he likes as well as all the things we don't like about his behavior.
Yeah, but that he's, you know, no sex ever.
Yeah.
Always grossed out. I do like that the sort of weird, I mean, there's a lot of obvious mirroring throughout the structure of the movie, but like the kind of mirroring, like when they attack the other gang, and initially they're like trying to like rape a woman, and it's like on a stage, and then later they're on a stage when they're like testing out the thing, and that seems like an intentional kind of, and those people even like bow afterwards after he's like makes them lick the boot, and he's like,
yeah,
everyone's like, ah, yeah, what a great performance. Well done, yeah. And of course, yeah, that his other gang members become policemen.
Yeah,
that was the thing.
Very straightforward.
When the movie, like, it's a weird and upsetting because like they take away his ability to do horrible things, which seems nice, but it sort of turns him into a fascist. He becomes a literal bootlicker. In that moment, he's got the red armband in prison.
That's true, yeah.
And and his friends become policemen.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, without left any protection for himself, he just becomes this usable political commodity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sort of interested in how people feel about the kind of, like, escalation or de-escalation of the like retribution against him, because like the kind of the first thing is like the homeless guy seeing him and then like a bunch of them beating him up, and I didn't feel bad for him at all in that moment.
yeah, that was
like,
was
even
so
though
okay
that guy like, yeah, seems like a weird old conservative, because when they beat him up, he's like, ah, there's no law and order anymore.
Yeah, yeah. This whole thing is law and order. It's no
but,
place
like,
for an old man. It's like, oh, that's kind of a retrograde view as well.
But it's sad. Like, it you know, they do just beat him up after he says that, and I'm like,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah, it sucks being homeless. Like, even if you're a conservative homeless purple person, you still deserve a house.
Yeah, and even
I don't
before
agree with
that,
you ideologically,
like, him getting kicked out of his parents' house too is like a weird scene, because you're like, this other guy Joe, who's taken his place, is like a real jerk, but you're like, he's kind of right. Like,
yeah, that's
the handsome son.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I feel about most of this retribution stuff, is I really dislike both sides of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pauline Kael talks about that in her review. I mean, her opinion is a little different than mine, in that she feels that he intentionally has everyone in the movie like act like bad, like literally like their acting is not as good as Malcolm McDowell's, so that like they will appear like worse people than him, so that we don't have to like feel as bad for them when things go wrong, and that, yeah, like the parents are pretty awful. Like, I think that there's something about the stylization of his mom with like her wigs and stuff like that, where she seems sort of like loopy and frivolous, and
yeah,
I feel like that's on
his
purpose.
Dad is very watery too.
It's one of my minor complaints about the film, is that like and something that, you know, we've discussed in the past, and I don't really know how to deal with this, I don't think that this movie is sexist, but it takes place in a very overtly sexist world and uses a lot of sexist imagery in order to make its points. And the imagery remains long after the commentary, the critique. It's like, that's, you know, I mean, that's part of why I didn't finish watching it and like resented Kubrick when I was younger, was that the people who liked this movie to me seemed like they thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I definitely
watched the first half of the movie and they were like, that's the good part.
I definitely know a woman who has like a Malcolm McDowell like tattoo, like it's like a stylized like picture of his face, and yeah, I don't actually get that now, because like on top of what I said about him being passive, he's also kind of an idiot. Like, you know, he might be charming, but he's not like a canny or like smart person exactly. Like, he's opportunistic at the very end, especially like he sort of realizes, like, oh, like, this guy's below me in power suddenly, so I'm going to take advantage of that. But, like, you know, that's Donald Trump. That doesn't, you don't have to be smart to do that. Like,
yeah.
yeah. That's right. It is funny. Yeah, he has, like, a Donald Trump character. He's doing all the terrible shit to people, and people are like, oh, yeah, he's so smart and charming. It's like, not really. He's not.
And apparently the novel had him be, like, kind of redeemed at the end, or, like, trying to change his ways, yeah. Which I feel like is a very pointed decision to not go there, you know?
Yeah. Seems kind of shit to me.
What?
Yeah.
I said the novel seems kind of shit to me.
Oh, I've heard it's very good, actually.
I heard
Alan Kale loves it a lot, and but I think that
started reading it and didn't like it.
The,
and, I don't know.
Yeah.
What I've heard is the novel's harder to follow because it's all first person from Alex, and he's talking in that sort of weird patois the whole time. So you're like, it's kind of hard to follow what he's saying. But I've also heard that the novel was released two different ways. Like, there was an extra chapter at the end, which was taken out or put back in certain versions. I can't remember, but I think that maybe what you're referring to, there was like a chapter that Burgess may have just taken out because he didn't like where it went. I would have to look it up to
I've obviously never read it, so like, but when I was pretty young and pretty into the movie, someone I used to know on the internet, she talked about the book, and for her, she thought that the last chapter was kind of like the most necessary part, because it's like she didn't read it as him like being redeemed so much as like deciding not to be violent anymore, because he met like one of his old friends, and his old friend's like, yeah, I settled down, I got a nice house, like, happy family, I feel pretty good. And Alex is like, maybe I should do that. Like, it's just like another way of him being like a really passive character who just like really suggestible, and that, like, you know, for her at least, that took away any element of him being like a anti-establishment or like countercultural figure, that, like, you know, any kind of those things about his personality are just eventually subsumed back into the main culture. But I mean, I think that's the original
That's in the movie though too.
Yeah
because that guy shows up and he's like, we're gonna get you settled into a nice house with a good job, and he goes, "Where and how much?
Yeah.
what kind of job and how much will it pay?"
I
agree.
No, he's the conformist, basically.
that the movie does it enough. Like, I think I can agree that that chapter, if your complaint about it is that it's superfluous because that's already in the book, then I think that's fine. I agree.
I like the way that money comes up in this movie. Nothing is subtle about this movie, but it's interwoven in interesting ways. There's a part when I think it's right when they're demonstrating the psychologist how much he's changed, and they're like, you know, look, we can send him back out into society instead of unprofitable punishment. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's the point of this. The point isn't so that he doesn't hurt people anymore. It's so that he makes a profit.
Yep.
Yeah, so that those prisons are too expensive.
Yeah,
get rid of them.
Uncrowd
some of
those prisons.
They're going to figure that problem out soon enough.
True.
Privatize those prisons. I don't know how it was in England at this time, but it's already going on in the United States.
One thing that came up a lot when I was reading reviews of this movie and I wasn't sure how to feel about is that a lot of people pitch Alex's behavior early on as like in a response to the repressiveness of society. And I don't know how to feel about that, because it doesn't feel like what's happening in the movie. At least, like,
that's not how it feels to me, no.
Yeah, no. Like, his... We don't really get much context for his society, and that's actually, like, a complaint some people had. Like, But I'm almost like, I don't know if I agree with that complaint, because I don't think the point of the movie is to, like, pathologize. In fact, like, this, given this movie's, like, streak of anti-psychology, I don't know that, like, we're supposed to feel like, you know, like Kubrick really cares about characters as, like, you know, here are a set of circumstances that led this person to be the way that they are, like...
Yeah, it's also like from his parents or something like that. There's nothing obvious or whatever. Like there's a moment with the like, with the
sucky, but in a boring way.
The guy, the school guy, or the guy who's like supposed to like counsel him, his caseworker. Yeah, he like he gropes him, but I don't know.
Pedophilic vibe going on there.
Yeah. So there was
also like a violent pedophile vibe, because he doesn't really he gropes him, but like in a way where he's also like punching him in the nuts.
Yeah.
He gets up really fast and looks like that hurt.
Yeah. But I'm not sure if we're supposed to like from that deduce like, oh yeah, all of society is just like all these awful, horrible human beings, and so he's just reacting. I don't know. I mean, it's much more... I think it's much more interesting to think about the fact that, like, there's no particular motivation for why he does what he does. And because of
violence.
Yeah. And because of that, it's like for a laugh or whatever. Like, he just does it. And that's way more scary.
I think for pleasure,
Kubrick thinks that that's just, like, maybe not, like, on a person-to-person basis, but if you look at humanity as a whole, that there's that it's very violent and that there's not a very good explanation as to why.
Yeah,
it's just an inherent part of.
I think also like his age or whatever. Like I feel like in a way, this movie's appeal to teenagers proves the point of the fact that like his teenage like hedonistic sociopathy is just like something about, you know, being a 16-year-old boy. And a bunch of 16-year-old boys really love this movie, including old 16-year-old boy me.
Oh, yeah.
Real me embarrassing. Too. Had a big poster of it. Not for the right reasons. I thought they were the right reasons, though. I thought it was so smart.
Yeah, I was talking with someone at work about Rage Against the Machine, and I think I feel kind of similarly about this movie, where when I was like 15, I was like, Rage Against the Machine is so hard, and they're anti-authority, and blah blah blah, whatever. It's like, they're just like me, they're angry about stuff. And then I was like, by my mid-20s, I was like, oh, Rage Against the Machine, Clark Burns is stupid. It's like, hey, who cares about this? And then, and now, as a like full adult, I'm like, oh wait, Rage Against the Machine is like writing about a corrupt racist police system. Like, they're writing like in-depth things about, you know, a political system that's designed to marginalize black and brown people. That's pretty meaningful. I was the one who was, you know, taking like the, you know, like, my dad was mean to me.
Yeah.
Teachers want me to do homework. Like, that's not what they were saying.
But, yeah.
That's not what they were saying.
Yeah. Some of those that work forces.
Not angst. It's
the same that burn crosses.
Yep.
Yeah. Still don't like their music, though. That's the unfortunate part.
Yeah.
But I still, I'm fine with what they stand for. This is just a small point, but I did think it was kind of a mean, but potentially... Well, I thought it was a funny joke, but I don't know if I should feel as funny as it is. But the kind
sounds
of
like Kubrick.
The writer that he beats up and then is disabled or whatever, like the way that he introduces him both times is the same, where it's like, and then but the second time instead of like his wife,
this
it's like
a guy.
A super burly dude, and I was like, so he just decided to like. His sexuality is fluid,
buffest,
and he's like
Austin Powers.
He's David, like,
That actor is the guy that played Darth Vader's body in Star Wars.
Oh, nice.
David Prowse.
But it seemed like a joke that he was like, like my wife couldn't protect me when. When I was attacked last time, so my next relationship I'm gonna it's find somebody
purely practical decision to become gay.
And into bears.
Yeah. For protection. Oh, man.
Because he even, like, the guy even says the same line. He's like, oh, who could this be at this hour? And he's like,
yeah.
Oh, I'll go check. He's all buffed walking up the stage.
The way he's, like, holding up Malcolm McDowell, who's just, like, this helpless...
Yeah, he
helpless,
just carries him like a baby.
Helpless dude in his arms is pretty funny.
And same later
I
when...
Think most of section is pretty funny. I like even just like the cut, like when he arrives at the door and it cuts to the same shot and they've got all the books back up in the bookshelf in the same place. I laughed at that. It's like, man, just trying to go back to exactly how you were seems sad.
Yeah, I also think the way that scene where he's at the dinner table plays out is pretty funny too, where he just keeps pouring the wine and Alex is like doing all this bullshit where he's like looking at the color of the wine. He's like, whoa, good year. He's like, oh, good smell, great wine.
I mean, I have to say that the wine looks really weird and fake.
It's like fruit punch.
Yeah. It's like not wine at all.
It looks like Hawaiian really like lunch. Kool-Aid or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very weird.
I do think that the timing of him passing out is very funny too, though, because that scene goes on for so long and the people come in and you're like, oh, he's in no danger. And then he's just like, bam. His face goes right into the spaghetti.
Classic Mom's gag.
Spaghetti.
Classic spaghetti gag.
Yeah. Even his performance, which is over the top, still makes me laugh in just how over the top it is. It's like, enjoying the food! Like, not even veiled hostility. He's just, like, very angry, but saying socially decorous things.
Yeah, that actor was... What? I believe that actor was also in Barry Lyndon. Let me look that up real quick.
Okay. But, I like, cinematographically, their movie is, like, mostly clamped down, tripod, whatever, shots, still shots, but there are a couple of times when it goes, active.
Handheld.
Yeah, and one of them is during that, early assault scene, but then there's also, like, movement in, like, strange places, like, when they go to the prison and there's a helicopter shot over the prison, and I was like, that's an interesting visual connection.
Mm. Yeah, that prison kind of looks like a panopticon, like Foucault, and I was like, that's upsetting. Yeah. I bet that's a real prison. I bet they didn't build that little set.
Oh, it's English. A real panopticon.
Yeah, prison designers were like, Foucault's got some good ideas. That was our takeaway.
Yeah, that brings up another thing that I was kind of interested to talk about. Oh.
And then there's one more moving camera shot that I really noticed when he gets transferred from the prison to the hospital, and it, like, falls into the room, and I was like, so another assault is happening, I guess.
Yeah.
Gonna watch some films.
Yeah. But the thing I was gonna say was about, I guess, like, satire and the way that, I guess, the message that the director intends is taken from the movie. Because there was controversy around this movie, although from what I've read about it, the controversy seems a little unfounded. It seems like just reactionary because of the content of the film. It seems, you know, again, like people blaming violent video games for violence. And it's like, no, that violence was like inherent already. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just expressed in this, you know, medium. And you're blaming the medium for it existing at all. But I do think there's an interesting conversation to be had about, you know, like, the value of satire, especially what you were saying about Foucault, where it's like Foucault was critiquing the way that society behaves like a prison, and the prison designers being like, oh, this is a good idea, we should use this. It's like, no, that's not what I meant at all.
Yeah, I think that at least at this point, in movie making, like the time that A Clockwork Orange, obviously there was no point at which movies weren't designed to make money, but I think that like the way in which like capitalist efficiency regarding movies has sort of increased. I think like back then I would be a little less critical of it than I am now, but like that there is a kind of point for me now where it's like Wolf of Wall Street makes like $100 million, and like how much of that is Scorsese like kind of oiling the tracks so that they can capitalize on that middle market of people that are just gonna miss the point and think that
this is awesome.
Belfort's like a very cool guy. Like,
well, yeah. you can look on LinkedIn for thousands of people constantly like memeing him unironically. Like sure. every fucking thing that he says in that movie is just like used as like a sales pitch tool or whatever the mm-hmm. fuck. It's really, really hilarious yeah. and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, but like, you know, I don't know.
I have a similar argument with my dad all the time about like audience, because it seems like he doesn't think or care about audience. Like he cares about facts, I guess. And so like he'll bring up a discussion about like gender science or something like that. And I'll be like, even if this is true, do you ever think about whether or not the worth is worth more than the possibility that
right.
there are people in the world who are going to take this and use it as a cudgel to beat women with?
Right.
And yeah. it doesn't seem like that is something that he, you know, cares about.
Right.
And I'm like, you should care about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rationalism's bad. We proved it already. Yeah. The Nazis, they love rationality. That's what you get yeah, when you're like, are like, people just beings well, that don't matter? Like,
well, yeah, and it's also like proven to not work on people who are already, you know, like immersed in propaganda. Like, even if you bring up rational arguments to like a Trump supporter, it's like they don't care. Like. Mm-hmm. Rationalism is not going to solve those problems anyway, so it's not even a good,
yeah,
you know, system to adhere to in terms of like, you know, like fixing problems or changing, you know, the minds of people who are already bad.
Yeah,
it's very important though if you want to know that you're right.
Yeah, it's that third way thing of being whatever like above everyone else or whatever. You know, it's like, oh well, I'm, you know, I'm above all of that. I'm a, you know, a moderate or whatever. Whatever people adhere to in that weird third way ideology that they just want to feel smarter than everyone else. But no, while watching this, I was thinking about the movie Death Wish, because it's another example of like, I very definitely believe the person who made this movie does not endorse any of the behavior of the people sure. in it. But yeah, I can see, you know, a situation where people read it exactly the opposite. And, you know, most importantly, I think the main actor, Bruce Willis, in that movie, I don't think that he thought the same as Eli Roth when he was making it. I think he saw it as just like straight up like, yeah, I'm like Charles Bronson. It's just like a straight up action movie.
And yeah, it's like, it's the old Starship Troopers school of acting.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, we're definitely in a different movie than whatever we thought we were in, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really clear until a movie's edited what it is. So
yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
That's true, yeah. It is hard to tell.
You look really cool and you're going to shoot a bunch of marginalized people for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
Your deck isn't white.
Oh, this is sort of off topic, but I wanted to bring it up before I forgot, which is that the design of the movie I like a lot, like them.
Yeah.
Like, especially the part that made me laugh the most was like when he first gets arrested and they've got him in like that cell, and then his caseworker comes to visit him and it's just like this very narrow hallway that leads straight to a desk, and then he has to like walk sideways to get around the desk, and it's like the tiniest room. And I was like, well, this is funny. Like, yeah. It's like space just they don't have any of it. Urbanity. We got rid of space. We don't need it.
What made me laugh the hardest, though, was the amount of just like pastries and cakes on the desk of that police officer. There's just like five plates full of cakes and pastries. It's like, of course, the fucking cops have like donuts and shit everywhere in their tiny little space. It's just filled with goodies for them.
But, yeah, and then his apartment is similarly cramped in a funny way. Like, the house. I mean,
he sleeps in a really tiny bed. It looks like, well, it is supposed to be a kid's bed, I guess, because he's supposed to be a kid, which is also kind of funny.
Technically, yeah.
But, yeah.
Then he has those huge speakers. And then that's how they reward him at the end.
Probably. Yeah. Bring out the speakers to play of all time.
Yeah, it's so funny that the music that is running throughout this, I guess, is the Ode to Joy. So it's like this piece of music that was created is like this like pure celebration, and it's like used in so many different contexts here where it's like, oh, he's just listening to it while he's jerking off, thinking about, you know, like rape and destruction and violence. And then he's like made, you know, completely helpless and sick and wants to kill himself listening to it. And then it's like, it's his like celebratory anthem at the end, like back to being his, you know, jerk off music or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, yeah, music is used pretty interestingly here. I like the main synth theme a lot.
It's really good.
It's real good. And it's used to like really good effect in some of the more violent scenes where like clearly the sound is added like to match certain things. But like I just really like the weird, like very hard to grasp tone that never really lands completely. It's always like a little bit distorted. I like how basically this movie says, probably of all the people in this movie, Alex has probably like the quote unquote best taste in music.
Yeah,
like
that
he really
something that I wanted to talk about is that seems like a little bit of a critique of like culture and urbanity as like something important to have. It's like that doesn't make you a good person. Like again, like
exactly.
Kubrick was pretty popular at this time. And would have, like, you know, had a film following just like he does now. And I feel like there's a little bit of a dig there of being like, yeah, you guys, like, say the right things, but you don't really, you don't have a humanity behind it. Like, being smart, you know, liking Beethoven. And I think it's really funny when the interior dude shows up and, like, the entire wall is plastered with topless women, just like boobs all over Alex's wall. But he sees like the Ludwig busted. He's like, likes Beethoven. And then he starts to walk out. He pays no attention to all the naked women. And then sees that there's a second picture of Beethoven. And he's like, oh, yeah, he really likes Beethoven. He's got two pictures.
He's a good candidate for this, Yeah, and I think it's interesting the sort of maybe dichotomy between like pornography and art or whatever, like because that Catwoman has like some of the lewdest pictures ever, but they're kind of stylized, so it's like, oh, this is art now. But
yeah, she has like a literal penis. And she's like, that's a very important work of art.
Yeah, like that scene could be like surface level read as, oh, Kubrick's like taking the piss out of like pop art or something. Like, oh, look at these stupid things or whatever that she has. But I think it's rather like he's saying, just rich people just buy shit. They don't even know what the fuck to do with it. And they don't really care about it really much. And it doesn't make them better people for, like, owning a bunch of art. They're just, like, weird
and
gross.
Having, like, the pornography aspect of it is, like, you know, like, rich people are just, like, perverts, too. They just couch their perversion in, you know, art.
Yeah.
They contextualize it as wellness. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a whole a running part of the design of the whole film is that, mm-hmm. like, and kind of going back to what, you know, I very first said about this idea that it's like a propagandistic polemic against propaganda and polemics, mm-hmm. Is that you take something like, in this case, like we saw the previous assault scene, like the penis is like this violent thing, and you put it in this nice modern, like, mm-hmm. plastic looking thing, and it looks very nice, but that's not what it is. Like, you modernize it and you remove the violence from it and you clean it up and you make it look really nice to make it art, but it doesn't make it a good thing.
Neat way to like mirror that thing which he ends up doing in Eyes Wide Shut at the masked ball, where everyone's wearing like these art pieces as masks, also for like a really like, because they can, because they're rich and that's why they do it.
Spend $50,000 on like a
you turn that, you know, penis into a piece of art, but the, you know, this hoodlum comes in and he's still gonna smash your head with it. It's still violent.
Monstrous.
It's a violent entity. I also think it's like the, I guess like the, I don't know if it's like the one sort of like pull away from, I guess, the showing, you know, like explicit violence in the movie, but when he smashes the lady's head, like it does that weird cutaway to like a painting.
Yeah.
It's like that, like, you know, cutting back and forth to the painting and like flashing the thing that looks like it could be some sort of violence, but it's hard to tell what exactly it is. It's, I think it's from one of the paintings on her wall, but it's just like that, you know.
Which is why I don't think Kubrick is making fun of modern art. He's like, he's using it literally to for effect, to
stand in,
because he's like, oh, this is like a really effective way to like show that someone's like potentially like faces smashed in all kinds of ways.
I think it's some sort of vaginal art as well, like part of the on imagery. The wall. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, it's some sort of, if not an explicit vaginal, it's some sort of reference to it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
The art. It's a very like a
train
weird
going into
yeah
the
I mean it's
thing.
It's very weird that he's like using this giant penis and like smashing it, and then he like flashes that, you know, the vaginal art in that moment. I mean, this movie, like, you know, it plays a lot with that imagery, in ways that are pretty funny sometimes. Although that part seems kind of horrible. it's weird to me though that how much more horrible the stuff seems when it's played up as a joke. I don't know, like even the guy who is like the writer who realizes that like, oh, Alex is the one that raped and killed my wife. Like, that part could be really ridiculous and funny where he's realizing it, but, like, seems horrible. And it's like, ugh. And it, I don't know, there's also something weird about using Singing in the Rain in a rape scene, too, which I think is, like, taking that whole idea of, you know, I don't know, media culture, like, absorption and, you know, like a love of music to a very weird place.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that, to bring it back to the writer guy, I think that his depiction is very interesting because, like, he's like anti this treatment because he sees himself as like kind of like a liberal guy or whatever, but then, you know, he's also very excited about the idea of like driving Alex to try and commit suicide as revenge. So he's like anti this violence, but pro the revenge violence that he gets. And he's like, So when he's like, this is providence. Like, that's what he really feels. It's like, this is perfect. Two birds with one stone, fulfilling my political ideology and getting some sweet revenge.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems to still have that like authoritarian streak, even though he's supposedly a liberal subversive, as the Minister of the Interior calls him.
Yeah, that's true. That part is very funny.
Subversive materials.
Circling back a little bit to that to the reception of this movie, for a lot of people think that the movie was banned in the UK, but actually.
Oh, but
Kubrick actually took it out of circulation himself after there were like these copycat crimes reported.
From what I read, the crimes were committed by people who hadn't actually seen the movie. In one case, a friend's friend told him about what was in the movie, about them like beating up an old homeless man, and so he went out and beat up an old homeless man. Just because he had heard about it, and the prosecutors basically like latched onto that and were like, the movie's responsible for this. And, but yeah, Kubrick was the one who was like, I think it was mostly because his like wife and children had received like death threats and stuff like that. And he had people protesting outside his house, and he was like, it's not worth it to have my family bothered because all this stuff is going on.
But yeah, it's like, again, like the logic of that argument is like, well, people are all inherently super nice. No one would ever do anything bad unless they see it in a movie, and then they can't help themselves.
Because
that's what movies do to you. They just make you do shit that you wouldn't otherwise do. Ever.
It's a pretty funny irony. What?
Movies do do that.
It is a pretty funny irony, though. Related to the movie and its themes itself, that people are like, this movie is horrible, it's making our society violent, so we're gonna kill you if you don't do something about it.
It's true.
One might call that, I don't know, would that technically be Kafka-esque? Would that be Kafka-esque? Like, you made this art about how violent our society is. Now we're going to kill you.
And then we'll never be violent again.
Yep. Solve everything. Boom.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Just had that harpsichord version of Ode to Joy in my head. The last 2 days since I watched it.
Yeah,
made me want to watch Raising Arizona.
I was gonna say the
banjo version of it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Forget about that. The score for this was actually done by a trans woman named Wendy Carlos, which I thought was pretty cool. I learned that from a documentary about like new age electronic music that wasn't great, but I thought that part was really interesting. I was like, oh, that music is really cool, and she did do a lot of really interesting things with synthesized versions of classical music. Apparently she also won like 3 Grammys for an album she did that was just like synthesized versions of classical music, so that was pretty cool thing to have in the movie. It's like, oh yeah, it's a really like interesting version of this old music that you already know.
Very cool.
Good note to end on. I don't have anything else to say. Well, I didn't even know that I would have this much to say, but this is a cool discussion.
Yeah.
Good job, us.
Yeah. But also, not an American film. At all. Not about America or made in America in any way.
Are you saying American money?
Yes.
Yeah.
Finance that's all point. British people.
Yeah. Yeah, very good point.
The only American part of this movie is Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, Kubrick, and I guess Warner Brothers did.
Yeah, Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers did technically give them the money for it, but it's all British actors, all taking place in England. Extremely British sensibilities.
Based on a British novel.
Yeah, British source material.
So weird.
Britain's like little America now, so it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't Lawrence of Arabia on the list? That's even more.
It's true, even more British. I think Bridge on the River Kwai as well.
They just claimed David Lean. They're like, he's American.
He's,
Cuba left America because he hated it. And they're like, no, we're keeping you.
They're ours, buddy.
Yeah, but then Hitchcock, then, they'll be like, oh, but Hitchcock's the best. But he was working within the American studio system, so he counts. It's hard to tell what their criteria is for an American film.
Gotta be in English. That's the only
criteria. So, yeah. English language film, essentially. 100 years, 100 English language pictures.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If so, please subscribe using your podcast listening application. Give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. Check out all of our content on loosecannons.net. Give us money on patreon.com/loosecannons. If you want to watch the movie that we're going to be discussing next, it's Stanley Donen's Always Fair Weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It. We'll find out.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.